Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have a great guest on. I have taken 60 hours of this class, not with him, but we're going to talk about it. So, Michael, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, Michael, before we start, what I'd like for you to do is to tell the listeners a little bit about who Michael is and what you do and how long you've been doing it.
Well, I've been... My vocational background is in information technology, and that has really lent itself to remote viewing, which is what I do now. Presently, I founded and run two organizations. One is called SciInt, and the other is called the Remote Viewing Consortium. And what SciInt does, SciInt is an operational intelligence gathering agency. What we do is we have a team of remote viewers who works remote viewing projects for clients in business and even personal individuals in some cases. And the Remote Viewing Consortium is sort of the research and development arm of the organization. And what it does is it seeks to expand the current technology of remote viewing. As you know, there's several parts of remote viewing, several stages that still need further development, and certain aspects of remote viewing that need to be sort of made better for people so they can use it, make it easier for them to find things and things like that.
Okay, so why don't you explain to listeners what remote viewing is? Because it's been around for a while, but a lot of people don't understand it, and some people don't even know about it.
Okay, well, let's start at the beginning, and I'll encapsulate this as best I can. In the early 70s, our Department of Defense discovered that the Soviet Union was conducting research into what it referred to as psychoenergetics. On our side of the world, we would call it telekinesis, psychic mind reading, and things like this. And they were expending the equivalent of millions of dollars a year doing this. So our generals and whatnot said, well, if they're doing it, we need to be doing it. So they started investigating psychics over here in our neck of the woods. And they found one psychic in particular named Ingo Swann. He is what we refer to as the founder, the father of remote viewing. And what he did is he had an incredible power of introversion. He could look at how his mind was processing information when he was on target. He was a natural psychic, very good one, and he was able to write down for the military, working with Stanford Research Institute, he was able to write down step by step what was going on through his in his mind, in his brain, every step of the way that he did a psychic session. And what the military was able to do with his help is develop what we now call the remote viewing protocol. Now, the remote viewing protocols are really just a step-by-step methodology that allows anyone, you could be as psychic as a rock, as they used to say in the military, it allows anyone to do a remote viewing session. With what we've discovered and what many other scientists have discovered is that remote viewing is an innate ability within a human being. It's not the same as being psychic. A natural psychic is usually free form. They just say, oh, I'm getting this kind of impression. But the difference between a remote viewer and a psychic is that a remote viewer is trained with how to deal with their mind in a proprioceptive way. And with proprioception is it's an awareness of how your brain is receiving and processing the information that it's receiving from you know whatever you want to call it out there, the Akashic records or the Google, the universal Google, if you want to call it that. And it allows us to just step by step gather information that is way more accurate than any psychic could ever do, because we have a trained methodology. We know as trained remote viewers when our imagination or our ratiocination begins to mess with the data so that if we're exploring something, it can permutate. Our imagination can take over, and we can know that that's happening, and we can dump that into garbage and still collect good data on whatever it is that we want to know. Now, a remote viewer has the ability to look at anything in the past, present, or future. We can find things. We can find it, like, if, let's say, something mundane. If you lose your wallet, if you knew how to remote view, you could remote view its location and then go walk over there and grab your wallet. And we've done that numerous times for people in the consortium. So in a nutshell, that's kind of what remote viewing is. It's a way for people to utilize what we could call psychic ability, but anybody can do it. You don't have to be a natural psychic.
Yeah, because I took actually 60 hours of remote viewing by two different instructors. And I took it because I wanted to help parents locate their missing children. But psychically, I do that anyway without knowing I'm doing it. So I figured, well, at least to know how I'm doing it would be a good idea. So I took the remote viewing classes, and I enjoyed them. It was really funny because your mind wants to play games with you.
Yep.
If you follow the procedure, it really can't.
Mm-hmm.
Is what we found. And I know a lot of people listening are going, what are they talking about? There was a movie that came out, actually two movies. One came out about 10 years ago, and I don't quite remember the name, but it had a guy who was, he did remote viewing for the government, but he was trying actually to get out of it, and it showed how he did it. And then they had a comedy come out called Men Who Stare at Goats. I didn't get to see it, but it was about remote viewing. And so a lot of people, I'm sure, Michael, are going, well, okay, so if anybody can do this, then how come we just don't do it automatically? But the reason, and I'm pretty sure you're going to agree with me, is that there is a technique to it. It's not where you can just go, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and expect great results. Not that you can't get it, but great results. Where the teaching of remote viewing actually has a pattern to it, and there's a system to it. So
yes,
go ahead.
Yeah, and that's the protocol. The protocol is kind of like a connected dots or a color by numbers. You just walk through the protocol, and it will get you the data that you want. Now, of course, there's other pieces of that. You know, you have to know how to target, setting up a target. And now a target is what we refer to as the missing children or a missing child. If there's a missing child that you want to find, there's a specific way to set that up as a target so that you can have a team of remote viewers remote view where that person is. And then in the analysis phase, which takes place after the remote viewing session, you have to put all of these little like puzzle pieces together and then go and find the missing person. So yes, there's a method and a strategy to the overall remote viewing procedure. And it was necessary because it was developed by the military, and everything in the military is process and procedure. So it has a really rigid format, but it gets excellent results, as you know.
Very much so. Why did the military keep it a secret for so long?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I have, via the Freedom of Information Act, about 50,000 pages of the Stargate and Girl Flame and Centerlane documents. Those were the code names that the military used for the remote viewing program. And there's actually about five other names that they use. And it's funny, the remote viewing itself wasn't really a national secret, but what they were doing with it was. So that's how come it just never sort of came out into the public until they discontinued the program. But if it had, it would have been... you could go to Stanford Research Institute back in the early 80s, and you could find out all about the remote viewing protocols and the program, but you wouldn't have been able to find out what the military was using it for. They were using it to spy on the Chinese and the Russians and find out where they were developing chemical weapons and things like this. And they got very good corroborative data, because what they used it for was a support tool. It was one of many of support tools that they had. So they had what they called SATINT, which is satellite intelligence, and they had people on the ground, doing sort of military espionage, undercover people going in in going into places for verification, because what they would use it is what in the military is termed as a vectoring tool. They would say, okay, you have to go here at this place, because this is what the remote viewing data said. The remote viewing data is saying that there is something in that building that has to do with this particular project that our fellows found out about that's going on in East Germany. So then they would send people over there. They'd focus their satellite imagery on there and get the data that they needed for verification. So that's why it was kept secret. But the protocol itself wasn't.
Why?
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge, bringing humanity closer to truth.
Michael, what I was going to ask you is why the government stopped using the remote viewing technique when there's still a lot of things that it could be used for.
Well, that's actually going to be one of my projects here in the next few months, is to find out exactly why. But if in private conversations that I've had with people who were actually in that program, Ed Dames being one of them, and I'm not speaking for Ed, this is just inference based on what he told me. He's very nebulous about that in specifics. But what I gather from reading various books and the documents that I have and putting that together of what Ed has told me, it appears that the government, our government, got a little scared about the idea of the military having the ability to find out anything they want about them. Politics, as anyone knows, the government is based upon secrets and dark room shenanigans and things like this. It's completely built upon that. And when you have a military that has the capability to find out anything they want about anything on the planet or in the universe, then that makes politicians quake in their boots, because essentially that's it could destroy them if the military finds out the wrong thing, or if they just want to, topple a government or anything like that. So I think they killed it because they got scared of it.
Yeah, but even though they've killed it, a lot of the remote viewers that are out there that are really good, they can still do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so but
in this sense, though, they're not within the arm of the government that can cause them any, look at what they do now. They pose no threat because they're outside of the military chain of command, and the government, along with their mainstream media, can ridicule remote viewing, as they did in The Men Who Stare at Goats, which is a parody of that whole military thing. It's a funny movie. I've seen it. But it's not remote viewing. It makes fun of it. It was funny. I'll put it that way. But it's not remote viewing.
Okay. I only saw it advertised. I didn't get to see it, but I knew what it was supposed to be about.
Yeah.
The other thing, Michael, you've changed some things, because one of the things, as you stated a little bit earlier, that maybe some of the listeners did not catch, is that although you can do the remote viewing, it's very hard to pinpoint the time frame.
Yes.
And you came up, or somebody and you guys all came up with a technique in order to be able to pinpoint. So can you explain a little bit of how that process works and why it works?
Sure. In remote viewing, you see, we can remote view something in the past or in the present or in the future. It doesn't matter. If there's a future event, if you can remote view it, that means that it exists in time, in what we call time. It exists in the universe. It means that it's sort of written in stone that that event will occur no matter what anybody does, because if you can remote view it, it means that it's already happened in a sense. But the problem is, as a psychic or even as a remote viewer, you know that it's very difficult to ascertain when that event is going to occur. You know that it's going to occur in the future, but you just can't pinpoint with any clarity when. So what I did, I developed the whole protocol modification. It's really not a modification. It's sort of an addition. We call it an application. And what I did is I started looking at what scientists think about remote viewing, and this is where my analytical skills in information technology came in, as I gathered up all of the information I could about quantum mechanics, physics, and how physicists view time. And then I looked at how philosophers view time. In particular, there's a book called Where Mathematics Comes From, How the Embodied Mind Brings Mathematics into Being. It's written by a cognitive linguist and a philosopher. And they described how everything that we do is based on metaphor. In other words, that the concept of numbers, the concept of time, it's a metaphor. Really, the only thing that exists for us right now is a moment, and that moment is nominally about 3 seconds of time. It's like a frame in using internet technology terms. It's a frame of information, and we exist within these 3 second bits that occur linearly in what we perceive as time. But that's not really what time is made up of. So that was another facet of the research. And then in the third facet of the research, what we did is I got my team together and we started targeting how the matrix is what we as remote viewers term the place that we get all this information from. It's the universe itself, really. But we started targeting it to find out how it viewed time. So then we had 3 sets of data to go with. I had the way physicists think time works, the way philosophers and cognitive linguists think time works, and then the way the matrix thinks time works. Now, by analyzing all of this data, and it was a ton of data, I was able to pick out what we refer to as cross-domain metaphors, or cross-domain mapping. So what I did is I mapped what the matrix thought time is, how the matrix views time, and then put that together with how we as humans view time to create what we call a map, a cross-domain mapping of time. And then it was a simple matter after that to just create a queue and use this metaphor of time. In the DVD that we have, we refer to it as the same thing as a USGS topological map. If you have a map from the USGS, you can see that it has all these little lines, and those lines represent elevation. So it's a two-dimensional representation of a three-dimensional concept of our planet as a sphere on a two-dimensional medium, the map itself. So in a sense, we do the same thing with Kronos. We create a map of time that the matrix understands. You can call it the Akasha Records, God, mind, whatever you want, but it understands time as happening all at once. But when it looks at us to plot a trajectory for an event, so let's say you want to know where's the best place for your child to go to college. Okay, so let's say that they're 5 right now. So you're looking very far into the future as a remote viewer. What the matrix does is it looks and creates a calculation, an algorithmic calculation, and it knows all of the variations that could take place, and it knows what variations will take place, and it plots a trajectory. This trajectory is like a line. So it views our lives in the same way that we do, in a sense. It picks out from this thought ball of the universe one little strand that is your life, and it plots it. and it plots it in metaphorical terms as a straight line through space-time. And that's what we use. So we were able to do this and get really good, excellent results when we're tracking things like 4X indices and things like that that occur. It's actually very difficult to target something in the future if you want to get immediate results. You know, like we've looked at 2012 and future events, but I have to wait years to find out if my Kronos projects for those are correct. So it's very difficult to find something to make a project of for verification in the future. So we chose 4X. And my whole team, we worked numerous 4X sessions, and we would always get a time window for this particular type of thing. And a time window is a window of time within which a event will occur. So it's kind of interesting. It means that the event will occur. It has, you know, that's serious implication. It means that the event will occur, but it's not going to occur. It's going to occur within a specific time. The matrix can't give us a specific date for certain things. So that was really interesting. But that's how it works. We target it. We have a metaphor of time, which is essentially a map, and we just go with it, and it works great.
Let's go backwards a little bit, again, for the listeners, because I already know what you're talking about, but I'm sure some of them do not. When you do a session, say you're going to pick a target, explain to listeners how you choose a target or what you can expect from somebody, you know, doing the target. You know, how does that work, Michael?
Okay. Well, anything can be a target. I could have my team of remote viewers remote view us now, and they would draw you and me and maybe some electronics, and it would be separated by a line to show that there is a separation of distance. Anything can be a target. Your optimum health. If you wanted to, if you have a friend or family member that has a medical condition and that doctors can't diagnose, you could target that particular set of symptoms and find out what's wrong. You might draw a spleen or some other organ in the body, and then they can take that to the doctor and say, "Doc, what does this thing look like?" And he might say, "Well, it looks like an appendix or whatnot." So anything can be a target. Now, of course, you have to know how to set that up. We've targeted UFOs, chemtrails, Bigfoot, and just all kinds of crazy things. And some of them are real and some of them aren't. It just depends on what it is. And we have a large team of remote viewers all around the world that we work with. And that's how you do the step-by-step methodology, of course, is something that you have to learn. And what you end up with, let's say that I was contracted to find something for somebody, what I would end up with is a few drawings and a session summary describing the place. Now, if I wanted to take it further, I could use GeoLock or GeoFix, which is two proprietary methods for geolocation using remote viewing. And then I could further pin that down to a specific area. And if it was a future event, I can not only pin it down to that specific area, but also the specific time frame within which that event would occur. But it would essentially be a bunch of papers and drawings and descriptions of things and places and events and date ranges if it's Kronos related. Does that answer the question, I think?
Yeah, and it answered some of it. But I'll give you an example. When I was learning how to do the remote viewing, you know, we got to feel all of our senses. You know, we got to, if there was a smell about wherever we were going, we could describe that. And we were constantly describing what we were perceiving to be there. And so for the listeners who, again, may not quite understand, you know, the senses play a big part in it, even though you don't know they're playing a big part in it. You know, so like, for example, one of the times when we were working as a group, we split into twos and we assigned each other a target. Well, the target that I got as I was doing it, I kept doing swirls and curls and spinning and, you know, blues, greens, browns, and different kinds of quick smells. And it went on and on like that. And I got very, very dizzy, right? So by the time we were done, because we went through it three times with all the description and everything I had, I was like totally dizzy, kind of sick to my stomach, like I'd been on a merry-go-round. And so I said to this person who had sent me wherever he sent me, I said, where did you send me? He said, I sent you to the beginning of Earth. And so I said, great. Now would you like to get me unwound so I'm not feeling so sick? You know, because it was describing, you know, how the Earth was spinning and turning and all the different changes that the Earth was going through. And it literally made me nauseous from it, okay?
Sounds like you bilocated.
Probably. See, I'm not a really good example because a lot of things happen to me that may not happen to a lot of other people. But, you know, that was one of the examples, you know. So in some of the other sessions we did, like, there was 25 of us in a class, and we all did the same view. But we all came up with, you know, some different things, but we all came up with the same things also as far as describing things. And
right.
when we were all done, we laid out all of our pictures, and then the instructor went through and said, okay, now look at this and compare and see what you have. And we all had most of the same stuff. A few of us had a little bit different, you know, things added to it, but it was all basically the same stuff. And that was like in our first day. So, you know, I don't know how long it normally takes people to learn how to remote view, but ours was very quick because most of the people were, you know, just dying to do it. So,
right.
First of all, Michael, give out your website so people can get a hold of you because you do have a DVD out there. So give that information out, and then I'm going to ask you some more questions.
Okay. There's two websites you can go to. The first one for the Kronos is called rvkronos.com. That's rvchronos.com. And the second is the rvc.org. And that's just like it sounds, thervc.org. And you can find out more about the consortium at the RVC site, and you can find out more about Kronos specifically at the RV Kronos site.
Okay. And can they get the DVDs from either one of those sites?
Yes. The DVD is available from either site. So that there should be a link on pages at the RVC and at the Kronos site. So you can get them both there.
If somebody wanted to learn how to do the remote viewing, Michael, how would they go about doing it?
If they've never done it before, there's quite a number of ways they can do it. The best way, of course, is to learn from somebody in person. I was fortunate to learn from the protege of Ingo Swann, his name is Ed Dames. He was the operations and training officer in the remote viewing program for the military. So he taught me, and there's also other ways. You can, instead of going the private instruction route, you can also get DVDs. There are several organizations out there. I think the best one, since I've explored most of them, I think the best one, of course, is the one made by Ed Dames, and I don't get paid to say that. It's a really good course. It got me up and running immediately with very good data, very good results. And, you know, of course, with RV Kronos, It's an intermediate to professional level application of remote viewing. So you need to be at least a beginner to really get anything out of the DVD. But in order to really utilize it to its fullest potential, you have to be at least an intermediate remote viewer. But that doesn't mean that you're stuck there. What we do is at the RV Kronos site, there is a crash course. It's like a mini crash course in remote viewing that I put together. It's 7 lessons. And you get them for free. And basically what it is, it's a lot of lecture. I explain how remote viewing works, and I walk you through several of the stages of remote viewing. As you know, there's about 11 stages of remote viewing. I go through the first 4. And in this, it's free. All you have to do is fill out a little form with your name and your email and send it off. And every 2 or 3 days or so, you'll get a new lesson, you know, right in your email box. You can just click that on and log into our site, and you can see the video, and you can learn, and you can go back and watch them as many times as you want. So that's if you have never, ever looked at remote viewing and have no idea what it is. I suggest you go to rvkronos.com and get that, sign up for that free 7 free lessons, and you know, you'll get a lot out of that because it'll give you a lot of background and understanding and what remote viewing is, why it works, and show you the first 4 stages. Now, if you really want to get into it, then you can contact the RVC, or you can contact Ed Dames at his website, and you can get information there. You can also get our DVDs at remoteviewingproducts.com. And there you can remoteviewingproducts.com. And you can also get a 4 DVD set of Major Ed Dames's Learn RV Remote Viewing course. And that is that's the first step I took. And that got me up and running. I've been doing this now for about 4 years, moving into 5 years here soon. And it's you know, it's a life-changing thing because you don't have to be a psychic. You know, I was already a little bit psychic, but not much. I was like, you know, probably mediocre, the normal human potential for anybody who is just nominally psychic. You know, you get the intuitive feelings like, oh, I shouldn't go down there or whatnot. So I had those kind of things. But you can do this if you're as psychic as a rock. It doesn't, you can be so not psychic and still do this and get amazing results.
It's really funny because sometimes, Michael, I think people who are not, quote, psychic, sometimes have an easier time with it than
they
somebody
do.
Who is. You know,
they actually do.
And I, you know, I want people to know that because, you know, a lot of people listen to the show and they go, oh, well, she's psychic, blah, 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 I can't do this, I can't do that. But that's not true because what I learned while I was taking my classes is that my psychic stuff automatically comes out. It just is there. But some of the people who never practiced anything psychic came up with really, really good results, and it surprised them because they said, well, I'm not much of an artist, but they drew great pictures. Okay, so, you know, just as a kind of side note, it's very true what Michael is saying. You do not have to be psychic. You know, a tiny bit, fine, but you don't have to even be a tiny bit in your mind in order for this to work, because it just works. And it's amazing. You know, it's amazing. And then your logic mind has to figure out why it's worked, because it doesn't make any sense why it should be working. Did you find that to be true?
Yeah. Yeah, remote viewing does not make any sense at all. So if you're sitting in a room, all you get is a couple of numbers, because we don't tell people what they're remote viewing until after they've done the session. So all they get is a couple of numbers. So it's like, how is this working? You know, you sit down, you get a stack of paper, you start going through the protocol with these 2 numbers, and you end up with these drawings and all these rich descriptions of things, and you draw what we call a site template, which is all of these things that you draw put together, sort of like a jigsaw puzzle, and then you turn them in. And, you know, you could be looking at something on Mars or inside Saturn, and you'll be on target. It's absolutely amazing. The corroborative data when you actually have a team of remote viewers working with you. It's absolutely incredible.
How many do you have on your team, Michael?
Right now we have 12.
Okay. It's just as important for the people to know, and you mentioned this earlier, that some of them are all around the world. You do not have to be in the same room with the people that
right.
you're remote viewing with. It isn't like that. You know, it's not where you have to sit there as a group. Not at all.
Right. In fact, it's best if you aren't, because something that can happen, and we've seen this before, it's called telepathic overlay. You see, everything is interconnected at a quantum level. You and I are connected at a quantum level. We're all integrated into what I call a quantum network. And if I'm doing a session and you're doing the same session right next to me, our data is going, there's going to be first what's called a division of labor, where I'm going to get certain things and you're going to get certain things, and when you put those 2 pieces together, it makes a whole picture. But in addition to that, if you're a very strong psychic or I'm a very strong psychic, there can be some telepathic communication between us that we're not aware of, and your data or my data can influence each other, or both. So it's actually best to be separated by distance and not do the sessions at the same time.
Yeah, and we found that to be true, too, because after we were done learning all of it, we actually practiced it for a long time when that's when I was back in Illinois, you know, just to see. And it was really, it was fascinating because even though we were not together, we were not in the same room, we were not even close to each other, we were at different houses, you know, we came up with a lot of the same information. And it was mm-hmm. really just kind of neat. How long does a session usually take, Michael?
After you're trained, it usually takes about 45 minutes for one session.
And before you're trained?
Well, before you're trained, it actually takes a little bit less because you're trained to sort of outrun your creative mind and your rational mind is how you're trained. So it usually takes about 30 minutes because we tell you to go real fast because what we're trying to get you to do is not think. You know, it's impossible to stop thinking, but we try to minimize that by having you go faster than the processes in your brain, which is nominally about a second and a half. So what we tell you is when you're writing down the percepts, and there's in what we call stage two, there's this thing called percepts, where you're writing down perceptions. And we go through textures and colors and smells and tastes and, you know, temperatures and things like this. And what we tell you is for each category that you're writing in, write down the word, but don't hesitate for more than a second or 3 seconds, depending on your level of skill. So we usually say don't hesitate. Just when you write down a word, then immediately go to the next one. Don't dwell on the word that you just wrote. And these are all adjectival in nature, so they're not verbs. So in other words, you're not writing down like, it's a car. No. What you're writing down is if you're describing something, like let's say you're working in textures, you're going to write down, it's something that's smooth and it's dimpled and it's got some prickly things. It's prickly and it's hard and rigid and inflexible and things like that. So you're using adjectival forms of words for your percepts when you're describing stuff. So you go through all that and it takes about 45 minutes once you get to the point where you're really good at, but we try to make it go faster when you're first starting out.
You know, one of the things that we kept telling each other is don't think. Don't think about it. Don't think. Just write down and go on. You don't hesitate. Don't stop. You know,
mm-hmm.
just keep going. One of the other techniques, and it's part of it, and when you're doing it, there's a part where you drop your pencil. Or lay your
yes,
pencil down.
Analytical overlay.
Okay.
That's something that most... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, can you explain that?
Yes. That is when you drop the pen, there's two times when you drop your pen. When you're working, when you get in what's called an aesthetic impact. An aesthetic impact is your emotions. As you're going through a session, all of these perceptions that you're getting are going to build up an emotional response in you, like your emotional response to the whirling around and the creation of the planet. Okay, so that means that you were bilocating. You were getting... you're probably empathic, and it means you were getting a lot of that swirling motion, and it was building up in you, and it was creating this sort of feeling of dizziness. So what we do with that is you have a feeling about, that means you're thinking about the sight. You have a feeling about it. So what you would do is you would write AI break, which is our short form for aesthetic impact break, and write down dizziness, and then put your pen down until that feeling dissipates. Because what you're doing is you're reinforcing in your mind that you don't want that kind of data to interfere with the session. So you're doing a psychological reinforcement by saying it, and then you're doing a physical reinforcement by putting down the pen, because what that does is it tells your psyche, your bio mind, if you will, that you do not want that type of information to interfere with your data collection process. Now, the other time that you would do this is for AOL, and there's two forms of AOL. So there's analytical...
Go ahead.
So there's analytical overlay and analytical overlay of the signal line, two very closely related categories. Analytical overlay is when your brain begins to take the data that you're receiving and put it together and try to bring closure to it. So it'd be like if you were exploring something and you're getting the percept that it's metallic and that it's smooth and that it's shiny and that it's rubbery and that it's leathery, and you're thinking, oh, your rational mind begins to say, oh, it's got to be a car, but it might not be a car. It might be a piece of furniture that has all of those same attributes. So that's what we call analytical overlay. So as you're going through collecting the data, the image of a car might actually pop up into your brain, into your mind's eye. What we're trained to know as remote viewers is that that image is always wrong, even if it's right, because you don't know that, because when you're doing a remote viewing session, you never know what it is that you're remote viewing. So if you get an image, we are taught to treat that as garbage. And that's where you write down AOL break, which is AOL hyphen, and then you write down the word car. So that, in a sense, is another reinforcement. You're telling your psyche that you don't want garbage data. You want real, just plain, descriptive data. Now, analytical overlay of the signal line is closely related, but it's slightly different in the sense that your brain is on target. Your mind is on target. You've got the target. You're gathering information, but it's something that you are so unfamiliar with that it has to rely on analogy, because it can't give you a perfect adjectival descriptive word that is associated with that thing. So let's say it was a nuclear power plant, and you don't know anything about how nuclear power plants work. Well, in your brain, you're at the power plant, you see the steam coming up out of the top of the plant, you see that you've got the heat and the moisture and the pipes and the computers, but you don't know how any of that stuff fits together. So you might actually, your closest thing would be your personal computer for the network that runs all of that equipment in the power plant, and a teapot, because a teapot is essentially what is where that your radioactive material is housed, and it swirls around cool water to keep it cool, and it creates steam, and it goes out, vents out the top. So essentially, you might write down, it's like a teapot and a personal computer. And that's an analytical overlay of the signal line, because you're relying on analogy to describe something that you have no experience with. So those are where analytical overlay comes into play.
When we got done doing the classes that I had done, I got a phone call from somebody, and this is kind of amazing. And I was driving in rush hour traffic about 60 miles an hour, and this person said to me, he said, Nancy, I heard about what you're doing, and I want to know if you can help me. And I go, well, I don't know. It depends what you're talking about. He goes, well, we're trying to find how my father was murdered and who did it. And when he said that, across my entire windshield, all I saw was North Las Vegas while I'm driving. And I said to him, I said, what happened in North Las Vegas? And he was on a cell phone, so it sounded like he hung up. It was like dead air. And I go, hello? Hello? And I'm still seeing this thing while I'm driving. And he goes, what did you say? And I said, what happened in North Las Vegas? He said, well, that's where they found my father's truck. And I said, I can't do this. I'm driving. So you'll have to come to the office. Well, what I did is actually set up a session for us to practice, but I was not going to be included in it because I already got some information and I didn't want it to, you know, either sway it one way or the other. So in the session that, you know, that we ended up doing without me just kind of guiding it, they came up with all of the same information that I did and then a lot more, but it was like really just kind of weird because that's how my system works. It just pops in and pops out. And it can be pretty scary sometimes. But the remote viewing part worked really well because they were actually trying to locate his body because they couldn't find his body, but they found some other things. And we helped them to kind of locate that. I mean, we can't take a whole bunch of credit for it because we can't, of course, prove it. But they did find, you know, some skeleton ruins and things like that and a little bit of stuff that would indicate that it was his dad. So it was pretty intense for me for a little bit, but when they actually did the view, it turned out to be really good for him. So it helped him out a lot. You know, so without the others knowing what they were doing, just as a target, it worked really well.
Yes, it does.
You know, so I do have a question for you, Michael. Since you can do timelines, this is going to be a doozy, why not do the lotto? Because I know people are sitting there thinking, well, they can do this. Why can't they pick out the numbers for the next day?
It's It's an it's possible. It is 100% possible now. The problem is that it will take too much time because the way to set it up, you would have to have a tabular matrix for each number. So if you've got, I don't know what it is here in Arizona, but in California they had the 649, right? So that's almost 50 numbers, number sets actually. So there's a lot more numbers in that because each one is comprised of three digits, and there's 49 of them. So essentially what you would need to do is you need to find 3 times 49, whatever that comes out to. You have to find each digit, and that means you'd have to do a remote viewing session, not just one, but multiple remote viewing sessions, at least 3 to get each number. So that's just too many sessions to do in time to get the lottery, because the further away you are from the lottery, the least likely you are to get it. Now, there is a way to do it kinesthetically, and you can get that also at one of Remote Viewing Products' website. But personally, for me, I'm not really good with that kinesthetic stuff, so I would always get 2 out of 3 numbers for the they call it the quick pick. So it's a 3 pick, daily 3. And I could always get 2 out of 3. I could never get the 3rd number. So it's possible to do it remote viewing or with kinesthetics, but it's almost like the God or the Matrix doesn't want you to get stuff for free, because we can find gold. We found gold multiple times. Now, the problem is it never takes us to, like, gold nuggets or gold bars. It takes us to mineralized gold that has to be mined. Even if we request of the Matrix to give us gold bars, it doesn't give us gold bars. It gives us mineralized gold in the ground that needs to be worked. So it's almost as if it's telling us, no, well, I'll give you gold, but you're going to have to work for it.
You and I have to talk after this is over, because I have something that you might be interested in. Well, my other thing, though, what if, since with remote viewing you can view into the future, instead of doing all of the remote views like you're talking about to get the numbers, why not just remote view, say, a newspaper that's, you know, a few days in advance that's going to have the numbers in it? Would that work?
No. That's actually been tried, and it was tried in the military. What they discovered is if you remote view, say, a book, okay, that there was actually a specific document inside the Kremlin's Defense Department that they wanted to find out what was in this particular file cabinet. And they couldn't get specific words. They could get ideas. So in other words, you would get the idea that they were developing some kind of a weapon, or that they had a particular strategy concerning that weapon. And they could get all kinds of data describing what was inside the documents that were inside the filing cabinet. But they could not pull out specific words or numbers. And the reason they couldn't pull those out goes back to the metaphors that I was talking about earlier. Our language is nothing more than a metaphor that is used to convey ideas that don't have descriptive words. Okay, the idea of love, you could easily just call it tape instead of saying love. It's a word. It actually has no meaning. But we ascribe meaning to it as it's a metaphor, so that we can have context in our conversations. The word love doesn't really exist. We could call it, like Shakespeare said, he says, a rose by any other name is still a rose. But what that really is saying is that you could call it a tulip, a webcam, or anything else you wanted to call it, and as long as everybody agrees that that red flower is that name, then that's what it is. So there's no physicality to numbers or to words, so it's impossible to actually pick them out. What you'll end up getting if you do that is you'll get, if there's nothing else on the page except the winning lottery numbers, you'll get the idea of numbers, but you won't actually get specific numbers.
Okay. And you also said that you kind of remote viewed 2012, which everybody's all concerned about, which I'm not in agreement with a lot of the stuff. But because I've been told things since I was 6 years old that are all proven to be true, whether I like it or not. So we only have a couple minutes left because, well, before we do that, give out your website again and how people can get a hold of you.
Okay, they can contact me at thervc.org, which is thervc.org, and they can learn more about Kronos at rvkronos.com. That's rvchronos.com.
Okay. So for 2012, we have like 2 minutes. Can you just kind of tell the listeners a little bit of what you found for 2012?
Sure. They can relax. Nothing's going to happen. December 21st, 2012, nothing happens. In fact, nothing happens until about probably the between the first and second quarters of 2013. So you can enjoy the new year. Just be prepared for whatever comes after that.
Well, see, some of the things have started already, but people aren't catching it just yet. And so the big thing about 2012, when people tell me, 2012, what's going to happen? It's like nothing. You know, it's just a shift.
Yeah, nothing's going to happen.
You know, it's just
enjoy your Christmas, enjoy your New Year. Everything's going to be fine. But after that, there is a possibility, a strong possibility. I have 80% confidence. And you're saying, well, why don't you have 100%? Well, it's because there's about a 20% running error rate in remote viewing data. So it's about 80% accurate, and that's about the most any individual can hope to get with remote viewing. Did I lose you?
Hi everybody, this is Xenia Seberg. I am the star of science fiction series Lex, which I'm sure you all still know. And you're listening to BBSRadio.com.
All right, sorry about that. I got dropped off. So the very last part, we have just enough to wrap up. So, Michael, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to be on the show and sharing your knowledge and letting people know that this is possible. So I hope you had a really good time, even though we had a couple interruptions.
Oh, it was great. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, Michael. You take care. I'll be calling you shortly.
Thank you
very much.
Bye-bye.
I'd like to thank you, the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and we'll talk later. Take care. Bye now.